LNFM 88.1 in Toronto. And this is Michael Dyer. Pull it out and plug it into a different one. And we're in a totally different environment tonight. And we are having some technical difficulties. We're trying to work them out as we speak. Hello, hello, hello. Bob, are you there? Oh, it worked.
Yeah.
Good work, Bob. Good work.
It's the first time I've ever successfully made a technical correction.
Yeah, no, congratulations. We are in our old space tonight. We neglected to book and schedule the usual studio for which
we were. No, we weren't right. I'd be here last week.
So we're in the old studio, and my name is Michael Dyer. This is the Church of the Subgenius Radio Hour. Across from me is Reverend J.R. Bob Dobbs. Good evening.
Good evening, Mike. You know, I was an amazing person, you know, at the beginning of last year and laid out and mimed, anticipated the amazing developments this past year. And it really was fantastic what happened this past year. And I'm just sort of quivering here, and I think the fact that I could make that technical correction there is a sign of the new level of 1990 already, the first challenge I met. And I think that we're going to look back in a year and say, my God, can we take another year of Bob and his changes and his stability at the same time, you know, comprehensive pattern information recognition?
I think the answer is yes.
We can take. Yes. Yeah. So I just, let's anticipate and feel that slack a year from now as we look back at results of what we're going to do this year. Crab voice cracking with excitement and anticipation, Mike wallowing his tug ready to say something. Oh, go ahead. Just licking the sugar.
Let it be. One of the downfalls of tonight's program is, unfortunately, unless we can move into Studio B before our time is up, is we cannot solicit phone calls tonight, and that has become one of the pivotal points of this program, I think, is the input and the feedback from John Q. Public.
But if there's someone who desperately had need to make a call, you know, has been wanting for months, tonight was the night they were going to call, they can call that number, we'll try to feed it through. Kent may be able to patch it through.
Somehow.
So you're right. Really desperate. But we got some interesting stuff for a while to entertain us. And while we wait for...
Kent won't be able to patch it through for a little while.
Yeah, okay, Kent. Kent says he can do it immediately.
Good. Yes. Good work.
Can you come in?
Okay. No, don't worry about it. Okay. He'll do it.
Most part will do it. Okay. Great.
Okay, good night.
Well, there's much to say. Much to talk about. I mean, this is the first show, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
For
1990.
You know, because Bob's number is 19. B-O-B. B is the second letter. O is the 15th letter. So you take 15 plus two Bs, which is two twos, the 22. 15 and 4 is 19. So 1990. 9 and 1 is 10 and 9 is 19. Take the call off. Person,
you go ahead.
Take it. Yeah, no, tell them, ask, relay the question. There's no dialogue. We've got a call. They know. So anyways, Bob's number is 19. This is 1990. It adds up to 19. 1, 9 is 10, and 9 is 19.
Never mind. That's important.
All right. You know, a lot of 19 is going to happen this year. 19. 9. You know, that's the Canadian hockey number, right? Gretzky hijacked that, put two nines. But that adds up to 18, so Gretzky is Bolshevik European control. That's why he had to go to L.A.
I didn't know that.
But Bob is 19, not 18. Let's start off with a letter. It's just as good as a phone call.
You've been doing that. We keep starting off with letters. That's fine.
This is from Subgenius Sean, very young Subgenius. I think he's in his 19th year. That's interesting, right? And he's out there in Bolton, and he raises this point. He says, on the Dave Emery and Nip/Tuck tapes a couple of weeks ago, that was the International Connection, they were talking about the book Acid Dreams and were saying how LSD may have been circulated by the CIA to undermine the youth movement. And they were saying in the book that LSD tended to arouse the need for instant gratification. This in turn supports a capitalist society based on mass consumption of material goods. But then Sean adds this, however, this also has spiritual ramifications. In the Messianic Legacy, page 253 to 257, they discuss the effects of a consumer society on man's spiritual quest as being reduced to a series of shortcuts. Also on page 208 to 210, they speak of the substitute religious values a consumer society offers and how it has led to a generation of neurotics and absolute despair. Right? That's the Neoist movement, right? Right? Neurotics and global solar despair. If the global oligarchs the global oligarchs are waging a psychological war on the masses, these effects would certainly serve their purposes, the effects of LSD. If they hope to eliminate all resistance to their power, they've more or less accomplished it. Now, this is the view of a young person, right? He sees that the game is over, Satan rules. All right. What I'm wondering, though, is whether this has been... Now, this is very important. This is the escape hatch. This is... Note what Sean does, dealing with the awesome fact that it's a global theater prison, right? A pink prison. He goes, what I'm wondering, thank God for wondering and wandering, W-A and W-O-N-D-E-R, right? What I'm wondering, though, is whether this has been directed by conscious planning or is it the result of the electric environment? Perhaps both. See, good paradoxical awareness, parallel movements, perhaps both, yes. The effects of the electric environment have directed the conscious planning of the LSD conspiracy. Certainly the information given by Emery and Tuck leaves no doubt that some planning was put into the circulation of LSD. But would the plan have had any success had it not been for the ground of electric technology? Very good question. I.e., the LSD conspiracy is a figure in the hidden ground of the electric environment. Anyhow, I'll finish up this letter. He goes, by the way, I've decided what to do for New Year's. I wanted to be in Berlin, but I couldn't make it, so instead I'm building a miniature wall. He's building a miniature wall in his backyard. He's going to spray paint it and party on it all night long, New Year's Eve. Then we'll break it down at 2:22 in the morning and auction off the pieces. After all, we're celebrating 200 years every New Year's now. 200 years every new year, so it should be something worthwhile, you know, worth auctioning off. Maybe we'll even make our New Year's dissolutions. Cute humor there. So, Vispata, Sean. So, the guys begin to see figure ground relationships. You know, he knows that the question is, did the oligarchs anticipate the effects of electric technology? Did they bring in the electric environment and have been panicking because they couldn't foresee all the effects, or did they have no knowledge that would come and been panicking because they didn't see any of the effects, therefore their brutal reaction, like what we did to Panama, right? Should we go into Panama? But is that a, look, that's a kid listening to, a subgenius kid, listening for only since April. Look, he's got already learning.
He's pretty well given up, hasn't he, at this stage?
No, he hasn't given up. He knows that he can live inside questions. He doesn't have to look for answers anymore. And the questions are where the resonance and parallel activity is, the freedom, the slack is. So if you can lay down the right question and express it, you've got that free will.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? It's not abstract. It's potent. So,
But Sean will never be wealthy. That's understood, isn't it?
Depends on what kind of wealth. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. he has slack wealth.
Well, slack wealth, yes.
So but you mean he'll never...
If he continues to wander around and question, then he'll never go anywhere financially,
unless
in a monetary sense.
Yeah, but pop culture is all marketing questions, so he could market the questions if I don't beat him to it, right?
I was going to say, but then look at you. You are independently and fabulously wealthy.
And I'm still living inside questions, mm-hmm. so it just shows that hardware wealth isn't that important when you... have the electric media ecology to deal with. That's what we can all share in. That's the new, not participatory democracy, that's the anticipatory democracy. We anticipate what's going to happen, and that's how we keep detached and uninvolved mm-hmm. and slack-filled as I look into your ears. You get me?
Yes.
So he may, how do we know? Sean might already have inherited wealth anyways. How could a person this young recognize and put together such information so early?
Well, I think the answer is obvious.
Yeah, a subgenius.
Yeah.
And a subgenius has luck. That's what it's all about, eh, in the book, the slant plane. The luck plane is slanted in your direction, so you're free, you're,
mm-hmm.
you're tight, you're tapered, you're fast and bulbous. Remember that? There are 40 people in the world and 5 are hamburgers. Let's all meditate on that for a few seconds, right? I don't think we should talk about Noriega, but I do have something to say about the grander view.
In Panama?
The grander view.
The grander view.
Yeah, because let's remember that on December 29th, 2 days before the end of the 80s, a fantastic bit of information was distributed around the planet. We don't know who else picked it up, but a subgenius picked it up and reported it to Bob, not knowing that Bob had released it. But anyways, they thought they had found something outside of Bob's realm. That piece of information broadcast on TV December 29th...
Is it related to the church?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Was the fact. And this is gospel. This is true. The ears of the 1990 listeners of CKLN are going to have to absorb this percept. The fact was that the Romanians announced they found three of Ceausescu's doubles. Not one, not two, three. All right? Now, what's that got to do with the fact that the American forces today are searching every car coming and going to the Peruvian embassy in Panama City? It has a lot to do with that. Because once a government has announced the role of doubles, it's never been done before. We know Dr. Beter gave this information out years ago, 15, 14 years ago. The thing is, now that it's been established by a collective art form called Romania, and they have told the world, then that means we can no longer assume anybody who's speaking to us in a public forum, in a national stage, is the original. Therefore, the side effect of that is we don't have to listen to them, because we know that ain't the source, or that ain't the origin, right? Because it couldn't be. We don't know. Now, the final question mark has been relieved with this fact, the three doubles. So therefore, how do we know, and we have a right to question this now, and to ask Barbara Frum and anybody else, Dan Wardock, anybody who serves in the function of distributing, in quote, news, we have a right to ask them, how do we know that that was not Noriega's double that went into the Vatican? All right? Aside from the fact that Panama laundered $1.5 billion for the Vatican Bank in 1981-82 and caused the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano, that money was sent to Argentina in the Falklands War to help Argentina.
Of course, how do we know that was in fact Ceausescu and his wife who were shot on that fateful day?
Well, you pointed out, I heard the archives, the replay, you point out that he was there photographed and videotaped with his eyes opened.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so that money that went from Panama, $1.5 billion from the Bank Ambrosiano, which caused the banker Roberto Calvi to be hung in London on the bridge, that money was circulated through Panama and Peru. And Peru was the first to object to the invasion of Panama. Okay, so the money is missing. George Bush's son in Denver manages a savings loan institution. That bank, several years ago, was missing $1.5 billion. The taxpayers had to cover it up. Well, had to support it and fill it up again, fill up the coffers. So you got the Vatican, you got the $1.5 billion going through Panama, you got Peru part of it, and you have Noriega sent to the Vatican, his double probably, or Robotoid, well scripted before turning himself in. And today they announced that the Americans are checking every vehicle and exit and entrance to the Peruvian embassy in Panama City, and they won't announce what they're looking for. But we know where they're looking for the real Noriega,
mm-hmm.
and it's through the Panama network. These global networks have a longevity. They span decades, right? So that's why if any crisis comes up, the players of that crisis have connections that you can track back or forward over a decade or so at least, right? So we're talking Panama and Peru, 82, 7, 8 years ago. So thanks to the Romanians, this really is one of the wonderful things that I'm going to create over the next year is the flood of new information that's going to come out of the liberated files in East Germany and Czechoslovakia and Romania. We're going to see a lot of stuff that'll mean that I'm going to have to be extra fast to be the real artist of our time and refine the sensibilities by keeping up on what's happening and keeping and anticipating and providing some kind of slack-filled perspective. I mean, that's the role of the artist today. And that's why we are never the same thing from our previous show. Much has happened in the last 2 weeks. We never know who we are when we look at each other every 2 weeks, right? Because we're not the same. And it's my skill to provide instant updating of our sensibilities dealing with the changes that are going to come up the next 2 weeks as well as the ones that just happened in the past 2 weeks. So that's my role. That's why I'm the greatest artist, right? Because we haven't got any phone calls, I can hijack this percept right now, right? So I'm just explaining a little background. So this refining of sensibilities with perfect pitch is the job of the artist, always been the job. Now, we don't have time under the fast changing of sensibilities every 14 days to wait for a movie, a painting, a record, a cassette, a public press conference, an investigative report, a committee report, a takeover of Cineplex. We haven't got time to wait till that's consolidated and presented as a package of perception to people. That's why this is so great to be here in CKLN and have the opportunity to get that art out every 2 weeks and update the real important hidden ground. That's the function of Bob. Refine our sensibilities so you don't have to consume any other stuff other than as anesthetic in the two-week interval, as long as you keep in touch with Bob and separate and merge with him at the same time and understand why he's saying how it has to be said. Because, in other words, there's no use for the mouth anymore.
Last week we had a notable phone caller, a gentleman who has a strong voice here at CKLN and in the community, and that was Clifton Joseph.
Yes.
And a friend bumped into Clifton after the show.
Feedback.
Yeah, feedback.
Feed forward.
And Clifton made the comment. He said he thought what you were saying was very hip and very together, and that he enjoyed the interaction that he had. Mm-hmm. And Clifton phoned in last week, if you weren't listening, or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Clifton also made the comment that you are the greatest con man alive.
And Connie's my wife.
Yeah, and that you have the ability to take what somebody is saying and wrap their own words around them and have them just acknowledging and agreeing, yes, 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 and then hanging up and wondering, what have I just said?
The great imposter, he picked that up.
I just thought I'd make that comment, yeah. I mean, Wilkinson's a very astute individual. And
a con man himself.
A con man himself.
Yeah. Was it? What's his phrase? Freak the funk or something? What he said on New Music? I caught that interview with him where he said... freak the funk or something, hype the funk. You know, it was something about putting on the funk to get his listeners' attention, you know, about what he has to say.
Yeah.
He claimed he had a message. But he picked up that I'm a con man? Amazing.
Yeah.
Because
one
we
show.
All know...
One show.
Wow, we all know that art is lie. And the skill of the real artist is to lie and make you feel that you've been told some truth. And to realize that, yeah, a lie is the truth. In other words, blur the boundaries and make you feel free.
Mm-hmm.
Make you feel empty and full and boundaryless.
Oh, you know, yeah, there are no boundaries here. I mean, the one illusion you create is that you embrace the left and you embrace the right. And then
the
you,
center.
You come right down the middle as well. And so there are those young budding socialists at home who listen to your show and think, yeah, right on. And
they're the LaRouche
fanatics who are going, hey, yeah, it's about time someone pays their dues. And then,
you're tickling me, Mike.
Oh, no, it's true.
That's accurate. That's why it's tickling. It's true.
And then everyone...
And then the moderate, the CRT,
then we go off the air.
Down because no. We're moderates, right?
We go off the air. People say, well, hold on.
What that voice?
Who? What?
Why did that voice happen? Where is it coming from? And was it necessary to know where the voice came from? Because I am not me. I have for the 90s, Mike. I'm going to explain what I was just going to say. Let's remind for new listeners what our basic platform here is. Our public platform is, this is for the corporate institutions that we have to interplay with as an electronic institution herself, is this is how we deal with the external reality. The other, in psychological or mystical terms, the capital O other. Not the East Village other, the other. That statement is, and this is a little bit of dogma, right? The future of government, which I claim to be involved in, right, solar government, the future of government lies in the area of psychic ecology and can no longer be considered on a merely national or international basis. In other words, the world government guys are obsolete. The nationalistic patriots are obsolete. So how can one conduct psychic ecology beyond or before national or international structures? That's the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly done here, but that's local. Now, for private consideration, for that part of yourself that's not your private citadel of consciousness, because that's already slack-filled, this is for you as yourself. This is your dilemma and your solution at the same time. This is for you. This platform, Part B. Under electric conditions, you can be both a Roman Catholic and a pagan, a highbrow and a lowbrow, but you will not last electrically. All right? Under electric conditions, you can be both a Roman Catholic and a pagan, a highbrow and a lowbrow, but you will not last electrically. That's another way of talking about part A, psychic ecology.
Are you addressing you as me or as our listeners?
Good question, Mike. See, you know, am I addressing you or the you? The royal you, the editorial you, or the personal you?
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got them all covered. Whatever you think you are, whether you go part A or part B, corporate or private.
Is this an interesting phenomenon where figures like... it strikes me that people who are involved in business... You mentioned corporate. It struck a note. I've been reading a lot about Donald Trump lately.
Yeah.
Some really horrible things about this man.
What book is that? Where do you read that?
A book, actually, a magazine where it's a New York magazine that is both sort of a gossipy magazine, but also reveals a lot. I'm referring to Spy magazine.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes it's sort of a bit of crap. I mean, it doesn't reveal a lot. But they had a column in the last issue about what famous people had said or done over the last month, and Donald Trump had come forth in some talk show and said, you know, if I could be born all over again, I'd really like to be born a black person because they have a lot of advantages in our world.
Trump said that.
And then in the same breath, the article went on to say that a temp agency had been called. Somebody in Trump's office wanted a temp for a couple of days. And the temp agency said, well, what sort of person are you looking for? And the people at Trump's office said, well, we really prefer you didn't send us any black people. And when these charges came up, the people at Trump's office said, well, you know, that's not true. We would never say anything like that. And in fact, we have one black person working for us, and she's doing a really wonderful job. What I was leading to was I'm seeing more and more, and maybe this goes back to sort of Rockefeller
yeah.
days, where the business person is higher in profile than the politician. And more so than almost anyone else in society is the business person. The Donald Trumps of the world come to mind.
Why is that a symptom of...
Or is it? Or maybe it's that I'm not really in tune. I just seem to see that more and more, that the interest, the personal interest, the investments, the day-to-day livings of the business person are more important than that of a Hollywood star or of the politician. Well, certainly on level, anyway.
Well, this is... this 5-minute anecdote you just told is so filled with elephant traps and tiger cages. It's incredible. There's so much that I could talk about there, but just to nibble away at it, I've explained why the pink archetype for the 80s called greedheads and the fascination with the businessman as archetype, a retrieval. Why did that happen in the 80s? First of all, in the electric environment effect on the American business culture, and in America traditionally, the culture has been business. That is the American archetype. Now, that was thrown into a dizzy tizzy in the 60s with the software flood, which confused the hardware archetype of business. But by the 80s, with the neoconservative or conservative replay, the conservative revolution, the new right, these were retrieval of visual values, hardware values. So the figure of the businessman was hoiked up as a nostalgic probe. He was a cliche that became an archetype only in the business culture of the North America scene. All right? That's one reason. The other reason, that's the bottom-up reason. The top-down reason is that politics was hijacked by the Bolsheviks through the Pentagon. You can read an article in the July issue of Harper's last summer where the businessmen were complaining about the congressmen controlling the media, and they were talking about Bolshevik control. Therefore, that's left to the Rockefeller group to hoik themselves up as some kind of cultural hypnotism to counter the effect of the Bolshevik-controlled Congress and the political image. Therefore, from a top-down perspective, they projected themselves on the population as a popular figure. They imposed it on us, because we certainly didn't have... We have a call. Ken's ready. Thanks, Ken. Because we certainly didn't want any pink archetypes. Hey, Philly. Mike's taking a call. And remember, Andy Warhol in the 70s said he wanted to be a businessman. And Warhol propagated the business archetype in the late 70s and early 80s. Go ahead, Mike. Mike refuses to say anything. He's still taking the caller's question.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Spy magazine is that you have information is obsolete.
Because of the reason Spy magazine is a relevant popular culture image is that information to be addressed to a population that isn't listening anymore is obsolete because everybody is involved in daily espionage through studying the Poltergeist and the ratings, the Nielsen ratings, or the hidden government, the shadow government. Yes, Mike?
Sorry, Bob. Just we did have a caller who really wanted to get through, and just a reminder that we're at our halfway point and that we are not in our regular studio tonight. We've been hijacked, and so we're in Studio A, our old studio. We can't take phone calls.
So maybe later.
Maybe later. But you're listening to the Church of the Subgenius, our regular installment, and Reverend J.R. Bob Dobbs is our usual guest. My name is Michael Dyer. We had a gentleman call, Bob, who just wanted to point out that through biological means, by altering DNA, and not just a, it's not strictly a pigment thing, you can become black. They're working on that now.
Yeah.
That in a few years, you could take a couple of pills and become black. So Donald Trump, if he wanted to, could in fact not necessarily have to be born again. He could become black. So
yeah,
I kind of wanted to point that out. It wouldn't be a cosmetic thing, but in fact a biological change.
Well, that's good news. Why do you think Trump would say that the black person has advantages? What thought form is he coming from, do you think?
I don't know. I think he's coming from the Harvard School of white angle bullshitting. I mean, he just...
the Norman Mailer School.
Yeah, he was brought up this way. He was in an environment where he had to speak, say something about race relations, and that was the first thing that came to mind. I don't think there's any substance to what he was saying.
Ah, that's a good point, because considering that the businessman felt threatened and was luckily retrieved on a bottom-up scale in the 80s as a return to the visual values of the left hemisphere American culture, that the form is that, but the content is a man like Trump who comes out of the 50s and 60s when the color television made the black face so charismatic that they felt the need to take over the country. All right? The civil rights movement and the black power movement. So therefore, Trump and most of the Reagan Revolution were guys from the 60s who hated all the subgenius elements of the 60s, right? So that is what they're a reaction to. So they work hard to infiltrate and get a top-down control so that by the 80s they can then impose their values on the culture, but they're doing it in reaction to what they didn't like in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would explain why his doppelganger, the thing he's wrestling with, his specter, S-P-E-C-T-R-E, his ghost in his own rearview mirror, is the black image that he saw as predominant in the 60s. So he's talking about, that's what he's dealing with. He admits it, even though he doesn't know why he's been given the opportunity in the 80s to do that, because we flipped out of the effects of color television and into a computer, satellite, corporate mixed media situation, which brings back in the American scene the businessman as cultural leader. Yet he doesn't know the ground of why he is able to say things based on his problem 20 years ago and have the audience listen, pretend they're listening. And that's why Spy, as an archetype, like Life magazine as a word was, when it was Planet of the Dead under radio conditions, Life was the magazine popular culture archetype presented to people. So Spy, why that word in the 80s is a popular resonant image effect which gets response among the subgenius and pinks alike, you know, it's comprehensive, is because under the corporate mixed media situation where we're all making consciousness together. We are literally making because there's nothing to match back to refer to. So every day we make. In that situation of making, we have to monitor everything, and anything can be useful. So our daily activity is espionage, monitoring the information environment. Not from the point of view of listening, not from the point of view of responding in a feedback way, unless it's coming from the other station. But from Not spying as if to match, but to look for stuff that you can flip back and impose in your particular art form, whether it be businessman, janitor, stockbroker, or programmer,
mm-hmm.
or magazine editor, or farmer, right? So everybody's an actor in the global theater. So therefore, spying is what everybody's doing, because there is no passenger on the global earth.
In the same issue, in the same edition.
Global Earth, sorry, excuse me, spaceship Earth, you know, global Earth. Which I should remind, just before you say,
yes.
is that we're not going to use the term global village in the 90s. It's the solar village.
Oh, now, hold on. We were also going to make a reference to...
Spy.
No, not spy.
No, I'm just thinking back. I'm
something
talking to myself.
About another news program here at CKLM. What were we going to refer to ourselves as?
Oh, we're the sister ship.
Thank you.
Yes. But in other words, Clifton is the flagship of CKLM, and we're the sister ship.
That's right. And we hadn't said that yet. We didn't say that several weeks ago.
Many months ago.
Yeah.
Because I heard them say it once.
So we are the sister ship.
I think we should take a break from us, Mike. Well, let's play some Dr. Beter.
Excellent.
Let's have some information.
I was just going to interject. In the same edition of the magazine, they had a whole column on recent book signings in New York City and featured...
Frank Zappa.
Did you read that same edition? So you read.
Arella phoned me up, told me to check it out. She did her espionage and told me, mm-hmm. and I did mine.
Funny little column, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You should read
good
it.
Picture of
it. But there was also Donald Trump and also... done an autograph signing.
And, you know, and they call Frank the businessman, rocker is businessman. That's why he maybe survived in a certain level.
But he was wearing hush puppies.
Yeah, they were upset about that, weren't they?
Yeah.
Is that businessman?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's businessman today.
Wearing hush puppies. But Trump had his all pre-signed, and he wouldn't personalize any of his books, and he had four security men surrounding him.
He just sat there?
Yeah.
My God. That's
versus Frank, who, you know, signed him personally. They weren't pre-signed, and they both sold the same number of books. So, but Frank also signed guitars and T-shirts, and Donald didn't. So,
well, Mike, this is astounding, upsetting information. We need perspective. I think Dr. Beter can provide it, because we talked about John Lennon. We know they're going to make a lot about that scene next December, on the 10th anniversary of his death, assassination. We had Beter give a little interlude, a little prelude on how Hinckley was Mark Chapman was programmed. But I promised, in my kind of way of promising, as a con man supreme extraordinaire, I promised that maybe I could look up the Dr. Beter explanation of the techniques of mind control that were developed in the 70s. So this is Dr. Beter, October 1975. This is tape number 5. Very early in Beter's career, he did 80 tapes. This is tape number 5, so you'll hear a certain harsh, early youthful enthusiasm in his voice in this tape. And
it's a demo tape.
Yeah, it's a demo for the global theater. No, the solar. No, global.
What are we calling it now?
Yeah, see that. Global village.
It's like if you write on checks, you have to put 1990 now. It's not 1989 anymore, so we have to get used to saying
solar village. See, solar village. Because we are. I mean, our immediate neighborhood now is the solar system with the solar government. So the global village as a term is irrelevant. We have to say solar village. But we know but the environment around that makes all nature, universal, internal, external, and all the man-made artifacts, actors on a stage, that stage being the credit card. So these media of first nature and second nature are actors. So it's a universal big theater,
mm-hmm.
but for our consumption, we just have the solar village and its participants.
All right, let's listen to some Dr. Beter.
Dr. Beter, October 75.
In other ways, too, the CIA and its brothers in the United States intelligence industry are knee-deep in things about which you are not being given the slightest hint. The Rockefeller spy and espionage establishment specializes in poisoning minds as well as bodies. I refer especially to the many techniques of psychological programming which they have at their disposal. Even President Nixon, after all, was Watergated out of office through an elaborate CIA plot on Nelson Rockefeller's behalf that pivoted around psychological profiling of Nixon and many of those who surrounded him in the White House. An artificial environment was created at the White House during the Watergate siege with predictable results based on the psychological profiles of Nixon and his aides. After it was all over, you may recall, some of the Nixon people expressed confusion and amazement at what had happened. They could not understand how they had lost their way and become totally divorced from reality. But this is only one aspect of the psychological control exercised on selected individuals by the Rockefellers through their intelligence web. They also have a variety of brainwashing techniques, including highly advanced secret electronic devices. All that is necessary to use certain of these techniques is to get a victim into a hospital. Once he or she is there, it's all over. In this controlled environment, a millivolt system with small electrodes is used to alter the brainwave pattern and inject thoughts and tendencies. As a result, a person can actually be programmed to do things they normally would not. Say, to leak information from a congressional committee doing special investigative work. Or a world leader can be programmed to change his policies. Or the wife of a diplomat can be turned into a spy. Or a world leader can be assassinated by a close relative programmed to do so. Or a true patriot can be programmed to assassinate a political leader or a potential presidential candidate. In all of these cases, the brainwashing techniques permanently damage a person's mind. It is terrible, alien to our way of life. But it is going on right now on behalf of those self-proclaimed philanthropists, the four Rockefeller brothers. I know of specific instances of every one of the programming situations I just gave you, but suffice it to mention only one. Sarah Jane Moore, who took a shot at President Ford in San Francisco on September 22, 1975. Unlike the incident 17 days earlier with Squeaky Fromm, the attempt by Mrs. Moore was real. Had President Ford gone across the street as planned to mingle with the crowd, he would have gone exactly where she stood patiently waiting with her gun, which she had picked out for purchase the previous day with a United States Treasury agent by her side. You may have been baffled by all the accounts of her attempts to get arrested ahead of time and her unsuccessful efforts to stop herself. But she truly could not help herself because she was electronically brainwashed and programmed as an assassin by Rockefeller intelligence agents.
When a person is associated with a work of art, the art takes on a special aura and vice versa.
Dan, what is this for? What is this recording for?
It's words.
It's the problem with language.
Sunday nights.
From 11 o'clock to midnight.
Check 1, 2. CKLN 88.1 FM.
And now I'm going to take the windshield off the microphone, stick it into my mouth, and turn the microphone off. I've had enough of recording.
CKLN 88.1 in Toronto. And welcome back, Church of the Subgenius Radio Hour. My name is Michael Dyer with Reverend J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Mike, I was just looking through my notes here I've used over the past year, and I have here note number 56, Spy Magazine. I have, the modern tyrant is the market researcher.
Okay.
Market research is espionage. So the modern tyrant, like Life Magazine expressed, is the market researcher, and we're all market researchers now. because there's no crew. Just no, there's no passengers on Spaceship Earth, only crew. Now, I understand we had a call from someone named Wayne. I know that person's been waiting to get me. This is a perfect night for them to get their question on through the phone. They can call, can't relay the question, and nobody will know who it was. But that person was waiting to probe with Bob.
We had another caller as well from a young man. Let's call him Andrew. And the call related again to Spy Magazine. And to paraphrase Andrew's question, with regard to Donald Trump, why in most issues does the magazine have a fixation with Donald Trump? Why do they tear him apart every chance they get? And I don't read Spy regularly. Mm. I know Andrew does. Why in one issue, then, did they have a change of heart and put Donald Trump on the cover with a glass of champagne, a title to the effect of, "What a heck of a guy"? Do you know anything about the...
Yeah, I understand that. The reason why they are obsessed, and remember, all media feed on each other in a civil war kind of relationship. Magazines, movies, radio, television, books, satellites, TV, they all feed on each other and expropriate and probe each other. The problem is, as Bob Dylan said in the Rolling Stone about 1978, he said that in the 80s there'll only be about 10 hit records. All right? Okay, so he's on to something there. And as we get more etherealized by the implosion of electric media, we do more with less. That's the etherealization principle. So that we are, and this is why there's a vogue for conspiracy theory. That's why Reagan was known as a conspiracy theorist, because we feel as electric media implodes, it also consolidates power into one entity. Therefore, whether it is true or not, it is a perceptual fact in, under the effect of the electric implosion. So within the fashion world, there's an obsession with one or two individuals. And for New York, which is the megalomania center for the pink prison, their nemesis is Donald Trump there in New York. So they're obsessed, and a whole decade of different kinds of media and fashionable content can revolve around one figure. So that is why, as we move into through the 80s and the 90s, we're doing more and more with less, which is partly my role. That's why everything will be consolidated around me to deal with the anti-Bob, because the anti-Bob is the later Trump phenomenon, but on a solar government level. No? So that... We've been interrupted here. I was addressing this particular point to Mike, and he's actually been interrupted. And not to, the rest of the audience can ignore this. So I preferred him to. Okay. So does that answer anybody's questions? Anyways, here's the point, Mike. In a review at the end of the 80s of Philly. Oh, I think he's taking a question, but I want to point out something here about the perfect pitch chart, talking about entities being consolidated around one image, one entity. Are you writing a question down, Mike? Okay. To continue that theme, if you look at the perfect pitch chart, you see, Mike, that the popular art form for the 80s was Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II. All right? Now, I have here a summary from the Toronto Star, I think. I think it was Bruce Blackadar. Look what he says. Considering my colleague Bob Marshall put out this chart with Ronald Reagan as the popular art form on the level of the Beatles and psychedelia, Elvis, Fellini, Joyce, Dickens, Shakespeare, and Christ, okay, on that level. Look what Bruce says in summing up the 80s. He says, let's lay this one on the table right away. The best sustained individual performance and masterpiece that swallowed the entire decade with its breadth and cunning was given by Ronald Reagan. And then he goes, now that we're in unanimous agreement on the supreme artistic achievement of these years, we will go on to try to capture some other historical highlights. And then he runs through a whole litany of stuff that he got from my show, I'm pretty sure. It's the same inventory of effects. But he's saying Reagan was the greatest artist of the 80s, and this was predicted in 1985 by Bob Marshall. Now, you see the obsession with that image? Therefore, within the business world and within the little New York village, the National Lampoon of the 80s would be slagging, or the Punch of America, would be slagging their particular local governor, Donald Trump. And that's why they would be obsessed all the time, because we're doing more and more with less and less. And that's why another level of an explanation of why I can claim this megalomania and say everything revolves around me. Because I am the hidden ground of this whole situation. Because the consolidation and implosion of the electric mixed corporate media creates the sensation of one person is guiding and anticipating all the effects. And since I'm the one who understands that process the most, then it, of course, consolidates around me. Now, the fact that we don't have to take any calls tonight too much balances what happened 2 weeks ago, where I graciously let Subgenius's rant for at least an hour and 20 minutes. One call, half an hour. Another call, half an hour. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to let me answer that. You know what I mean? And so I would justify my able to do tonight what we're doing.
People will digest this and come back in 2 weeks.
It's a State of the Union address, let's say.
A question relayed to me by one of our receptionists here. I don't know how to take this question, but you can deal with it as you please. Somebody is asking that the United UMF, the United Martians Foundation, that some UFO or alien being landed last Wednesday, and Bob squished two of the Martians, and this caller wants to know why.
Why I did that?
Yeah.
Because I'm working with Gorby, and Gorby announced in the middle 80s that they will attempt to colonize Venus. Now, according to Dr. Beter, that has already been implemented in the 70s. That already was the Russian Christian Skopsky post-Bolshevik Russian government goal. Now, the Bolsheviks, therefore, are left with Mars. And if you've noticed that George Bush, when he announced under his regime this past year, that his solar goal for the 90s and into the next century is Mars.